Welcome to the Holistic Health Podcast, where we delve into topics that bridge wellness and science for the skin, gut, mind, body, and soul. This podcast is brought to you by Gvome, where we believe that each of us has a unique ecosystem and path to reach our full vitality.
I'm your host, Dr. Raja Sivamani, an integrative physician and an Ayurvedic practitioner. Gvome is the notion that our jiva, the Sanskrit word for vitality and the essence of life, merges with our many ecosystems that compose our biome to form our unique jivome. This podcast is meant for educational and informational purposes only. None of the information presented here are a substitute for professional medical care, and this podcast does not constitute medical advice. If you have a medical concern, please consult with your physician.
Hi, everyone. Today, we're talking fasting. I'm Raja Sivamani and co-hosting with Ashley Dumont.
Hello.
And this is a topic that we think is super relevant to just any kind of wellness conversation, especially when it centers around diet. Wouldn't you say, Ashley, that fasting comes up as a topic pretty frequently?
Absolutely. I think it's very trending at the moment. A lot of people are interested in fasting, fasting themselves. And so there's a lot of information out there, different types of fasts. So we're going to talk about all of that today.
Yeah, God, I think there's like 1,000 different ways to fast. I can't keep up with all the different things. And even just earlier, we were just talking about a fasting mimicking diet so that you mimic a fast, you know, whatever that means, right? So you're going to educate us on that. Before we get started, give a little background that there are so many traditions that have built fasting into their daily lifestyle. I mean, you look at Islam and Ramadan, and that is a whole month of fasting, or a whole lunar cycle of fasting. And then within the Hindu tradition, there are people that will fast, you know, either once a week or around the lunar cycles. They'll pick one day where they just fast. And I know that fasting has been thought of as a way to conserve energy. It's in the Ayurvedic texts. It's in the traditional Chinese medicine texts. So it's really rich in tradition when you think about fasting.
I agree. Yeah, it's very rich in history. And so this idea of fasting is not new, although it is trending, but it's kind of been a longstanding tradition for a lot of cultures. Absolutely.
So why don't we talk about what are the different kinds of fasting that are out there? So Ashley, I know that you've been probably exposed to this more through your education than we get in the conventional medical system, especially with the naturopathic system. Do you guys talk about fasting?
We do. Yes. Yes. We have a bunch of classes on just fasting alone. So yeah, we can talk about all the different types. I can just name a few off the top of my head. And again, there's probably a different type of fast that's going to be available every single day. So we're going to try to get the best information, the most current, but there's things like intermittent fasting, long-term water fasting, as Dr. Sivamani mentioned, the fasting mimicking diet, alternate day fasting. So there are a lot of different ways that you can fast, essentially.
Well, take us through what people normally do. The fast that a lot of people come in and ask me about is, can I just take a juice fast or a water fast? Can you take us through what does a water fast look like? I mean, is it literally just water only?
Yeah, you know, they can be pretty intense. Yeah, so just water fasting would just mean water fasting for weeks on end, essentially. And so those are the most intense fasts, of course. And it's recommended that people actually stay in facilities to be monitored, right? Because you want to make sure that their electrolytes are okay and that their blood pressure isn't going too low. All kind of important things when you are just consuming liquids like water. So that's one thing of water fasting. And you absolutely want to rest if you're water fasting, because it can be really hard. You get the mental hunger and physiologic hunger as well that goes along with it. And you don't want to be stressing your body any more than it's already being stressed during the fast. So that's interesting that people come to you asking about kind of the most intense fast.
Yeah, well, you know what ends up happening is within the Ayurvedic tradition, there's this notion that you want to consume what you need, and fasting becomes a part of that. And in fact, when we think about gut health, it's believed that fasting can be helpful for gut health. From an Ayurvedic perspective, before I get into one of the studies, there's this notion of making sure you're not always feeding the gut something and you give the gut a chance to rest. And what's really interesting is that the gut does have a mucin layer right next to the epithelial layer where, you know, you have your intestinal cells and then you have this substance called mucin. And when you fast, what happens is that you're basically not providing external food. And so then you start to allow the bacteria that naturally can grow in that mucin to start becoming more abundant. And a couple of the bacteria that have been looked at, such as Acromantia mucinophilia, mucinophilia meaning love of mucin, is one bacteria that's thought to be really helpful when thinking about short-chain fatty acids. And right now, there's this huge trend about short-chain fatty acids being very good for you, being anti-inflammatory, helping modulate the immune system in a good way. Well, they did a study where they looked at fasting, and they took overweight people, and they underwent a program with basically, they did a fasting for a laxative treatment for 1 week, and then they followed with a six-week intervention. And they looked at what were the changes in the gut microbiome, and they found that with fasting, that it helped promote those mucinophilic bacteria, such as Acromantia. And so there is a little bit of early sign saying that when you fast, you do shift the gut microbiome. Now, how do I take that back to Ayurvedic medicine? Well, in Ayurveda, they do talk about this notion of something called the Agni, which is the metabolic power of your gut. And sometimes if you're feeding yourself the wrong foods, which of course we know is a huge tendency, wouldn't you say, in the standard diet?
Oh, absolutely.
In Ayurveda, the wrong foods doesn't necessarily have to be the standard American diet. Sometimes you have to look at body types. And then the wrong foods could be a mismatch of the food type with the body type. And that we could save for another podcast. But when you mismatch the foods, sometimes what happens is then it doesn't agree with you. And then the whole notion is if you fast, you can help reset the body. And it's actually simple. I mean, one way that people even recommend fasting is that you have a good breakfast, you have a pretty hearty lunch, and then you skip dinner or something really light, so that a fast doesn't have to be no food, but something very, very light. And then you don't eat till maybe the next lunch. And so you do a little bit of a fast where you skip dinner or something light and then skip breakfast and then you go and have lunch. And they look at that as a nice way of building in a fast into a regular lifestyle. I have to say, unfortunately, as a medical student, I probably unintentionally did that fast many times. I don't know if you've done that. I don't know if I got any benefits from it, because sometimes it was just like eating whatever food was available. I don't think that's part of regular fast, unfortunately.
Yeah, it sounds like you're explaining an intermittent fast, which has this whole notion of a 16-8 ratio. So you fast for 16 hours and then eat for 8 hours of the day. So something like a noon to 8 p.m. you would eat and then stop eating again until noon. I think that that's probably the easiest way to get into a fast and to really start in a routine, especially if you start maybe eating 9 hours a day and then go down to 8, or a way that your body is still getting nutrients and food. It just is condensed during that certain period of time.
You know what's interesting? I talked to my grandma, and she's now into her 90s, and I just played a game of Carom with her. If any of you have never played a game of Carom, it's an Indian game where it's kind of like, I guess you could say, akin to pool. It's not really pool, but idea is you have a striker and you strike pieces into the hole. And oh man, I mean, she's, I think, close to 93, 94, and she was just dominating. And I was like, she was so vibrant, and she was telling me where to do strategy. What's interesting about her, and even her mom, they lived for a long time. And, you know, she really grew up in India for the most part and came here with her eating traditions that were very traditional. She didn't really conform to the Western eating styles. She never ate dinner beyond just a few fruits, which was really interesting. She'd have a breakfast, she'd have a lunch, and she'd have a very light dinner. And it's interesting. It's really worked well for her. She stayed vibrant. So maybe she's onto something. I'm sure genetics has something to play with it. But it's this notion of not eating too much for yourself and just pacing yourself in a way, but learning to enjoy it and not feeling like I'm dieting, but building it into your lifestyle so that, yeah, this is just the way I'm going to eat and the way I'm going to do things.
That's interesting. Now that you brought up your grandmother, it makes me think of my grandparents, who aren't 90 yet, but have this tradition as well to eat dinner at 4 o'clock, 4:30, and to not really eat anything until later in the morning the next day. So again, having some time for their digestive system to rest.
Well, Ashley, why don't you tell me about what's been your personal experience with fasting? Have you tried fasting? Did it work for you? What was the approach that you did?
Yeah, so I don't come from a culture or background really that had fasting throughout my life. So it was kind of a new idea for me. Really, the only fasting or change in diet that I ever did growing up was not eating meat on Fridays for Lent. So it wasn't really traditional to me and to my family. So when I got into naturopathic medical school and we were learning about all these different fasts, of course, I wanted to try them out and try different things. I haven't necessarily per se ever done a water fast. I think that might be a little bit too intense for me personally. So I kind of stick with intermittent fasting. I tried that out and it worked well for me. Sometimes I wake up in the morning and I'm not very hungry. So I like to wait until my body's actually hungry to eat it. And then I go to bed pretty early. So it helps me in that way, I guess, to keep my eating in a condensed time frame like that. But I do want to say that it is really important before you tell anyone to ever do a fast, to really check in and make sure that there's no disordered eating involved. I know several people who do have
disordered eating, Ashley.
And, you know, eating in general is so personal and it's so primal, right? It's like, when am I going to get my next meal? Some people are hyper vigilant on when they're going to get their next meal, and to say, oh, you know, to cure this or to cure that or to help with whatever condition you have to not eat. I think that's really hard for a lot of people. I don't necessarily have disordered eating per se, but to me, I think it's so primal in myself that it's very scary to go without food, and to, especially if you're not well educated on, it's okay, your body can last without food for a little bit. But I think that that's a really important point that we have to consider whenever we're talking about fasting with anybody.
That's a very salient point, because I think if someone has an eating disorder and you're telling them not to eat, or, you know, vice versa, if you're telling them not to eat and then you start to see that they're starting to develop an eating disorder, I think you just have to be vigilant about that sort of a thing. For me, when I've done fasting, and I have, again, initially it was actually unintentional, it was when I just missed meals. I used to feel really tired when I first started doing it, especially the first 12 hours. I would feel really tired, really down. I'd actually start to sweat a little bit and I felt like, oh my God, I'm getting hypoglycemic. But you know what happened? As I started doing it a bit more, my body started to adjust and I started to feel a bit more energetic if I built in a fast. And I think that was a hard switch for me. And I can't say that that'll work for everyone, but for me, that is something that I started to feel. My body type, especially from an Ayurvedic perspective, I am Pitta Vata. I'm a combo. And so for me, I do have a pretty high metabolism. What I found was when I fasted, it centered me a little bit and it allowed me to enjoy food a bit more. So I didn't just crowd it into my mouth, because sometimes I used to do that. Just stuff my face with whatever I could get, and sometimes not even enjoy it and read things really quickly. But I've learned to slow down a little bit with the eating and enjoy the flavors. So raw vegetables, believe it or not, taste a little bit better for me, although I don't typically eat a lot of raw vegetables. But there are things like even bell peppers became juicier for me, maybe.
And sweeter.
And sweeter. Maybe I've tricked my taste buds into starvation mode. But I actually did feel a bit more energetic. And as a general rule now, I don't eat a very heavy breakfast. And it keeps me energized through the morning. It seems so counterintuitive. Then I'll have a bigger lunch. And for dinner, I try to keep it simpler. But it's just something that's worked for me along the way. But it was tough in the very beginning because I didn't know what to expect. And I was a little intimidated by this notion of not eating. I agree. It's such a personal choice.
Yeah, it can be scary for some people. But I'm happy that you found a way to easily incorporate it into your daily routine, or into your routine in general, and made it work for you.
Now, do you find that patients that have fasted, in your experience, or when you've talked to even your colleagues or the folks that have experimented with fasting, did any of them say that, yeah, this just isn't for me? Or do any of them find that there's one type of fast that just worked way better than others, especially when you have a busy lifestyle?
Absolutely. I think water fasting can be challenging, right? Because you have to pay to be put into an area where you are monitored all the time. And if you have a busy lifestyle, that may not be as applicable for you. I've had some friends who have fasted and they also like the intermittent fast. They think that it's the best way that they can incorporate it into their busy schedules as a student and lifestyle. And I think from when I've talked to them, they have had increased energy and have felt better overall. But if you think about it, if you eat a really big, heavy dinner, you feel so tired and fatigued after. So it makes sense that if you kind of decrease that load that your body has to digest, right? Because that's work that your body has to do to break down all of that food. If you give it less, it doesn't have to work as hard, then you overall will feel more energized and better.
You know, talking science a little bit, there have been a few publications, not that we're all looking to extend life of flies or Drosophilas, the fruit flies. There are studies that, you know, going all the way from fruit flies up to, you know, mice and rodents to humans, where they've looked at different effects of fasting. And it's interesting enough that when you don't overeat or you control what you eat, you actually can extend lifespan in the fruit flies. Now, does that directly correlate to humans? Of course, you can't just directly correlate to humans. But this notion that restricting intake somehow will robustly increase lifespan so that you don't overstimulate the system, for lack of a better way of talking about it. I think that's really interesting. And I think that's where fasting has really gained a bit of interest around this trend for fasting, because there's this notion that actually if you don't eat all the time or you control the way you eat, it can actually help you extend lifespan potentially. Yeah. I mean, that notion is very interesting.
It is. And it's often paired with things like meditation as well. So kind of usefulness and elongation of life, I think, are big things that are being looked into, especially with fasting. Absolutely.
Yeah, actually, it's funny that you mentioned that, because some of the conversations around the great yogis, especially in India, they used to talk about how when they go into a deep meditative state, they wouldn't eat for months. And oh, wow. It would just be in the state of meditation and just sustain themselves off of the breath and off of just this meditative state of mind, state of body. I don't know if anyone's practicing that these days, but I love the fact that you brought up meditation, because it goes to show there are other ways to engage your mind and engage your body. And maybe there are ways to actually engage the mind in a way that will slow you down so that you're not always looking for constant stimulation, especially with food.
Absolutely. And there's even a mindful eating practice that you can do, right? And you mentioned it earlier, how you really were able to kind of take all the senses of the food, the smell, the sight, the taste, and to really enjoy it. And so that's what mindful eating is all about. It's about really just taking one bite at a time, and even going further and taking it back and thinking about who prepared this food, or who picked this apple, who picked this pear, and thinking about it all the way through its cycle and how you're so grateful to have it. And to eat it, and then to experience that completely.
Yeah, I think this mindful eating is really important, because I think when we talk about fasting in general, probably really the conversations around mindful eating and being really careful about how you eat. I know in the Ayurvedic tradition, when we think about eating, you're supposed to eat where you are solely focused on food. It's sometimes very hard to do that. Even I can't picture sitting with my wife eating, although we have done this as an experiment where we sit next to each other and we don't say anything to each other. And we just and, you know, you naturally want to converse, and eating is such a social behavior too, right? Because you go out to eat, go out to dinner. It's just all paired with a good company and good conversation. So it was interesting when we tried not talking and just eating in silence and really enjoying our food. We were able to do it for a couple of days, and then afterwards we actually wanted to talk. So
yeah. This is probably the only time we have together throughout our day.
So. Yeah, no, I know. Unfortunately, you know, that sort of a thing does crop up. But I think there's some hidden messages in there. When you're trying to eat, you try to be mindful, and, you know, don't just do something where you're not focused on the eating totally and you're just eating as a secondary byproduct. It should still be at the forefront. I think all of us strive to eat as mindfully as possible, but we had a class in medical school where we ate a blueberry, one blueberry. Mm-hmm. We thought about all of the things that went into growing the blueberry, who picked it, just like you said,
how did
it get to the store. And we kept looking at the blueberry. And I don't know if it was because it took a long time to get that blueberry into my mouth, because we're thinking about all these things, or whether I really was imbibing all of this energy, but it was the most fulfilling blueberry I've ever had in my life.
I'm surprised you had that class in medical school. I'm so happy to hear that.
Yeah, no, it was a part of our integrative medicine series that we did on the side. It wasn't the part of the actual curriculum.
It was like elective or something.
Well, no, actually not even. It was one of these things where the students kind of put together an integrative elective because we wanted to learn a bit more about nutrition and mindfulness. And so it opened my eyes to this notion of really focusing in on your food.
Very cool. Yeah. I know. I think I've done that as well. I think it was a grape, actually. So it's always usually something like that.
Yeah. The best grape you've ever had.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Well, Ashley, I think this has been a great conversation. And, you know, what we'll do is let's wrap it up for today with fasting, but we'll come back and we'll hit some other wellness topics soon.
Oh yeah. We have a lot more to talk about for sure.
And this is the Wellness Podcast with your hosts, Raja Sivamani and Ashley Dumont. Thanks, Ashley.
Thanks.
This is the Holistic Health Podcast, brought to you by Jivome, where we believe that cultivating a healthy ecosystem unique to you is important to living vital and living well. Don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe to our channel, and be sure to follow us on Instagram and Facebook, and visit us at jivome.com. Check out our membership options to take your health to the next level.